I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. In 2002, KCUR Management conceived of a new daily public affairs news talk show. They hired me to host it and Steven Steigman to produce the program. And today, we celebrate our 10th anniversary. Over the past decade, we've spoken with artists, musicians, physicians, philosophers, authors, chefs, U.S. presidents, countless elected officials, and others. More than 2,600 shows later, we're still seeking good stories and information about how people interact in society and how public policy shapes our lives. Today, we'll revisit some of our favorite moments and pull back the curtain on how we put it all together. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. 10 years ago yesterday, producer Steven Steigman and I launched this version of Up to Date. Our first interview, a guy named Bob Dole. Since then, we've interviewed past and future presidents. We've visited with Oscar-winning actors and those who should have won Oscars. We've interviewed countless best-selling authors and a whole lot of governors and senators, members of Congress, and mayors. It's all been about bringing you a better sense of your world and what's happening around Kansas City. And did I mention that we began 10 years ago today? This hour, I'll look behind the scenes at some of our best moments and maybe a few that weren't so outstanding. We'll count down some of our favorite shows. Joining me in the Walpo Dean studio here this morning is senior producer Steven Steigman, who is the founding producer of Up to Date. And Steven, welcome, and easy show to book today.
It's a very easy show to book today. Thank goodness that I'm you know, all I have to do is talk, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I had an older man tell me once that he heard the first show and was a little surprised the station let me back for the second one, but I wasn't too nervous or anything. What do you recall about that first day?
I recall I wasn't such an old man, but it wasn't me who said
it. No, it wasn't you.
You know, honestly, that day was really, really, oh, that was a rough day. I mean, I planned the show for about a month out.
Yeah.
And we had booked all these guests, and we were supposed to have Kansas Governor...
Graves.
Mm-hmm. And he canceled on us like 2 days before the show.
Yeah.
So we had to book this whole new show. So we booked all these guys. We had Bob Dole. We had
Kit Bond.
We had Jerry Moran. I remember the calls that came in that day. It was my first time ever producing a talk show. You're just a bunch of right-wing Republicans. KCUR doesn't need a show like this.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the reaction. And what I really wanted to say, that's who the elected officials are. That's who we had connections to. We put together a lot of shows that you would feel comfortable with as a political reporter. But I don't remember much else about the day.
Well, I've got to hand it to Bob Dole. He was very nice to come on that first day. We only asked him about 47 times, and it finally worked out that we were able to interview him that day. You know, what strikes me is we've had to take a stroll or two along the learning curve highway, I think, over the years. Remember the show at the Boulevard Brewing Company when we plugged our equipment into the fax machine, and every time a fax came in, we were disconnected and we went off the air?
Well, there's a naive producer, me, thinking that I could short. We have this unit that sends our signal back to the station that would plug into a plain old telephone line.
Yeah.
So the fax machine / copier was this enormous machine, and it was blocking the outlet for the phone. So I found this spare plug in the side, and it works.
Yes.
Well, little did I know that putting a sign on there that said, do not use fax during 11 o'clock hour, that didn't work because somebody used the fax. And then all these incoming faxes cut our signal off like 4 times. Now, thank goodness we were at the Boulevard Brewing Company. I mean, that made life a little bit easier, I guess.
Well, John McDonald, who was the founder of the Boulevard, was getting, I think, a little frustrated with us after the 6th time or so we went off the air that day.
Yeah.
But what a good guy.
He was a very good guy. And, you know, we went back afterwards. We went back a couple times for broadcasts in subsequent years. We did one with Stephen Reichlin, the barbecue and grilling expert.
That's right.
And that was a fun show. We were actually standing outside the Boulevard Brewing Company grilling meats. And Danny Alexander, our associate producer, put together some great ingredients and grilled some fantastic stuff. That show worked out perfectly.
We sort of made up for it a little bit.
I hope we did.
I think we needed to, yeah. Well, how about the Smoke Alarm show? Ruth Reichel, the editor of Gourmet magazine, doing some cooking at my house of all places.
Well, you know, that was part of our Culinary Expeditions series, and that was a tough show because Ruth Reichel had just found out three days before that Gourmet magazine was folding.
Yes.
I mean, she had been the head of Gourmet for years.
And she was going to cancel her visit to Kansas City.
She almost did cancel her visit to Kansas City, but the powers of folks in Kansas City, namely Vivian Jennings at Rainy Day Books and the chef at the time who put together the late John McClure, who put together this special meal just for her. When Ruth Reichel heard that John McClure had ordered, you know, custom grown hens, Cornish hens, and like this custom grown pork, she couldn't turn us down. They wanted to do it from a hotel room. You know, the interview. I said, no, you're in Kansas City. Let's do it. Let's do it at Steve's house. It'll be comfortable. You'll have a drink. You'll just relax. You don't have to be on. It's just radio. And it was a great show. We had Ted Habiger from Room 39.
It was fun.
We had Doug Frost mixing drinks and pouring wine for us. It was your kitchen, beautiful kitchen. Until the very last minute of the show. You know,
and what happened there?
Well, you know, funny you should ask. We have that clip. Let's play it.
We'll do a little fire action here in the kitchen, the Kraske kitchen here today. There it is. Yeah. He is now glazing the dessert right now. And, you know, it might be really an appropriate time, Doug Frost, with the show coming to an end, to sort of offer up a toast here to Ruth Reichel and Gourmet magazine as it closes on this very difficult week, and by all means to thank Ruth for sharing her time on this day and what's been a very tough week.
Well, indeed. Actually, I've got a little straw wine or a... he was indeed
there
burning something.
There goes the fire alarm from Ted Habiger. My wife is rushing over to turn off the fire alarm. There we go.
Well,
thank you, Katie.
Yeah, it's good to get everybody's attention before a toast.
That was such a great moment. We replayed that time. We never cut out the fire alarm because what a great moment in live
came
radio history.
Literally with like 30 seconds left in the show.
I mean, you
so
heard the music in the
couldn't
background.
Have been any better.
Right.
What a funny moment. Well, then there was Nikki Giovanni, the poet from Virginia Tech University, who managed to drop a naughty word on us on the air, which I think was the first time someone had really dropped the F-bomb during a live broadcast.
It was a conversation. George W. Bush was president. He had just nominated a new attorney general. And the news was during the break. We heard about the attorney general. And after the break, she just went off on George W. Bush.
Yes.
And she dropped the F-bomb. And we all looked at our board, our control board, looking for the delay button, the dump button.
Yeah, we panicked because it had been so many years since someone had told me, hey, knucklehead, push this button if someone says something naughty and I forgot which button to push.
And of course, we're all thinking, did she say what she just did?
Yeah.
did she really? Anyway, we missed it. I shouldn't have admitted that.
Yes.
Anyway, I think we edited it out afterwards. We had station management come in during the break and say,
very concerned.
The FCC could fine us. You know, Nikki, you can't say that. She's like, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
She was really apologetic, and what a great poet. And then a few years later, that tragic Virginia Tech shooting.
Yes.
She
was the one who gave the speech at the ceremony at the school one day as everyone came together.
We are Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
And it was great. And we played that on the air. And I it still moves me when I think about that speech.
Oh, an amazing thing. It still moves me to think how panicked I was when the F-bomb went off. I didn't know which button to push. And then there was Pat Metheny, the great jazz guitarist who's from Lee Summit, who stood us up literally at the last moment for a program. This is like, seven, 8 years ago. And talk about a scramble. Pat sort of made out okay in the deal because to fill time, we played a whole lot of Pat Metheny's music. But no one had ever really stood us up like that before.
No, we hadn't been stood up like that before. And I think years ago, you and I always thought, what happens if a guest doesn't show up?
What does happen?
And you rarely have guests not shown up or that we call them when we get them on the phone or something happens. It's happened maybe, four or five times throughout, 2,600 shows.
And I thought when we first started, it would be happening with
all the
some
time.
Regularity.
Right.
But it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen very often. People are very respectful of the show and you and sometimes of me. And that moment, I don't know what we did. I just can't. We played his music. But sometimes when that does happen, when the guest isn't there, we pull out the newspaper and we find the interesting article of the day. We call the reporter and we say, can you talk about this?
Right now.
Right now.
Not 10 minutes from now,
sure,
right now.
Sure, yeah. Sure. No, can you come down to the studio? No. Well, I try to push those memories deep inside my brain and never think of them again.
Well, if any member of the Matheny family happens to be listening right now, Pat, you owe us one. He just was in town for a concert. Next time you're in town, you got to come in here and give us a good interview here. And then finally, there was the hyperventilating young man who was a guest, the only person in the studio one day. I'm interviewing him, and he begins to hyperventilate about 10 minutes into the show.
Oh, gosh.
And I think we're going to lose him, and I don't know what's going to happen to this show, but I began asking him about his family and who his mom and dad were, just to try to bring him and recenter him a little bit, and I think it worked okay.
Steve Kraske, a political correspondent, radio host, and psychologist.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Did you give him a bill on the way out?
I should have that day. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske, and today we're celebrating our 10th anniversary of UpToDate. I'm joined by Steven Steigman, the producer of this program. You know, Steigman, we were talking before about shows that sort of went awry. I was just looking down the list of guests that we've had over the years. And Kansas City, Kansas actor Ed Asner, who played Lou Grant on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, he was in here one day. Terrific guest, terrific guy.
Taping the show.
We're taping the show, right. Fortunately. And we were talking with him about, you know, Lou Grant and Mary Tyler Moore and all of that. And suddenly he veered off on this tangent talking about the World Trade Center and the September 11th attacks and how
right.
the whole thing had been jerry-rigged ahead of time by the Bush administration.
Right,
bombs
right.
placed in the building prior to the attack so that when the planes hit, the whole thing would go off. And I had never heard that particular conspiracy story before
until
he began riffing on this thing. I was just dumbfounded by what he was saying, but that's where he was and what he believed.
Well, and what you did was very appropriate. You sat there and you listened to him. You didn't say, I don't think you were prepared to challenge him on the conspiracy theory, but I think, you know, you were nice enough to say, hey, thanks for sharing that
yeah,
with us.
It was quite a moment. And then I went on the internet and figured out that a lot of people sort of still
believe
this.
That's right. A lot of people still adhere to the 9/11 conspiracy theory, right.
Not sure there's a whole lot of proof to it. But anyway, people might wonder how we pick our topics. And I guess to call it an exact science might be something of a stretch.
It is not. That's a really big stretch, actually.
Yeah.
It's not an exact science. People ask me this question all the time. They say, first of all, they ask me what I do, and I say, I work for KCUR Public Radio. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I produce our show. I do our show UpToDate. They say, are you Steve Kraske? And I say,
too bad.
Yeah.
What a disappointment when you find
exactly,
out.
Exactly. Right, right, right. No. And I tell them what we do, and I tell them that some of our best topics are pitched to us by listeners. Really are. I mean, we pull a lot of topics from the news. We pull topics from, you know, there are authors and speakers heading through town. But oftentimes we get great, great pitches from ordinary listeners.
And I think if listeners want to make a pitch right now to us, they can pitch an idea to us by going to KCUR's Facebook page and
sure.
Let us know what they think. Or if they have a thought or two on their favorite shows or not so favorite shows, go on KCUR's Facebook page today and let us know what you're thinking.
And the science behind it is, you know, there are thousands and thousands of ideas. There is no shortage whatsoever of ideas out there. It's what turned into a good talk show. We used to go by, you know, what's a good talk show that lasts for an hour?
Yeah.
Now, as we're segmenting more, what's a good talk show that we could do like a 15, 20-minute segment on? Not everything's a good topic. I mean, there are some things that are very interesting to a very small percentage of the community.
Right.
There are some – we try to go for things that are of broad interest. You know, we do our best. And there is no science, but I've developed over 10 years this gut feeling for what works and what doesn't. And I'm usually, I would say 99% of the time, I'm right.
Probably about 96% of the time.
Okay.
You're close
See,
to 99.
Once again, I was wrong. So,
well, let's turn to some of my favorite shows
let's
over the last decade. And one that I will remember forever was the day that Jane Fonda, the Oscar-winning actress, strolled into the studio to promote her new autobiography about, obviously, her life all the way through from childhood all the way through her latest movies. And she came in wearing a dark pair of sunglasses sitting right across from me. You can't see your guest's eyes, which is incredibly unsettling. I think we've both had that experience in the past. And at some point, the big news story at the time about her book was about the time that she and her first husband asked that she take part in a threesome in her early marriage.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but there was something about sitting across the table from a quite distinguished woman wearing dark sunglasses and having to ask her this incredibly personal question that really had me extremely uncomfortable.
Let's listen.
Let's talk about men for a moment. In this book, your father, Henry Fonda, tells you that you are fat. Husband number one, Roger Vadim, asked you to take part in threesomes. Husband number two, Tom Hayden, tells you on your 51st birthday that he's in love with someone else. And you catch husband number three, Ted Turner, making love to another woman a month after you married him. So what do you know about men today that you wish you knew 45 years ago?
It's not so much about men. It's what I wish I knew about myself.
Hmm. You know, what struck me about her, it just came through to me so clearly on the air that day that she was probably 68, 70 or so when she was in here talking about her book, Stuggy. And what amazed me was here was a woman, even at that late advanced stage in her life, who had been through so much and had had so much success, personal success in her acting career, who was still struggling with the image and some of the damage that her father had inflicted on her when she was a kid, with giving her absolutely no props, no self-confidence, no courage, if you will. And it came through to me so clearly in that interview, and it was almost painful for me to listen to.
But you know what? You bring up something really important, which is one of the things I admire about you, which is you ask these questions. You know these people have been on book tours, and they've been asked a million questions. They've done hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of interviews. And every time somebody says, you know, that's a really good question, or no one's ever asked me that before, I think, here we are, Kansas City, KCUR, and we're asking this famous person a question they've never heard.
Yeah.
That makes me so proud. Now, you know, a secret behind the scenes here is when you're doing this interview by ISDN from a studio in another city, you'll pump your fist into the air saying, yeah, that's a good question. But that's the best thing to hear is when somebody says, that's a really good question.
Well, Jane Fonda, her visit, I don't think I'll ever forget. One other person I'll never forget here on this program, David McCullough, the great historian, author of 1776, and of course, around these parts, the best-selling author of the great biography of Harry Truman, came out in the early 90s. You know, he was in here talking about his book, 1776, and got to the point in the story when America is battling the British on Long Island, and it's a pivotal battle. The Americans are getting their backsides whumped, and the whole battle, the whole war is really hanging by a hair here. Let's listen to what David McCullough had to say about this great moment in the war of 1776.
Day was coming. Daylight was coming. And they still hadn't gotten everybody off, probably 2,000 or 3,000 people down there. And, of course, the minute daylight came, the British would see what was up, and they would pounce on them, and it could be annihilation or the surrender of another 2,000 or 3,000 men. At just at that point, in came a providential fog, which covered the retreat as well as the night had, and there was no fog over in on the New York side. They got 9,000 men, all their equipment, just as you say, cannon, horses, everything, off of Long Island, off of Brooklyn, over to Manhattan, in one night, without the loss of a single man.
And the British didn't know what was happening.
The British never knew what happened. They woke up the next morning, and the Americans were gone.
And what I loved about that guy was just how excited he still was. It comes through a little bit in that clip, but his hand gestures, he was so animated talking about this great moment in American history, a story he had told so many times, but David McCullough still into it, and what a voice. Of course, the voice of the Civil War series that Ken Burns did
once upon a time. That's right.
But what a voice, and what a great guy. Just
a terrific
guy, man.
And you know, he exemplifies great guests. They tell great stories, and they tell them in such captivating ways that the listener wants to keep paying attention.
I love the adjective providential fog.
Providential fog.
What a great word.
That should be the name
so
of a
fitting
town.
For what
providential
he was talking
fog,
about.
Right?
Yeah. And then we had another one person with great Kansas City ties, the great Hollywood actor Chris Cooper, another Oscar award winner. He and his wife, Marianne Leone, were in here talking about their son, their severely handicapped son, Jesse Cooper, who had died just a couple of years before from complications from cerebral palsy. And boy, again, just an amazing guy. And he grew so emotional in the set, talking about his son, tears in his eyes. And boy, he was feeling it that day.
He was. And that was one of those interviews that we could have played as a rerun over and over again. And,
but
our primary recording system and our backup recording system both failed that day.
It happens.
I was so upset about that because you can hear almost all of our shows in our archive. That's how we pull these clips here. And any listener can go and find them on our website. That was one show that we didn't capture, and gosh, you'll never be able to recreate that moment.
Well, if the face of Chris Cooper doesn't come quickly to mind, go on the internet and just Google him real quickly, because you'll recognize him. And just what an amazing, amazing guy both he and his wife were. And we are back. This is Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. I've been your host for 10 years. Our show turned 10 years old today, and you bet I'm kind of proud about it, because when we first started, you just don't know how long these things are going to last. And here we are a decade later, and, you know, we take this show seriously, but we don't take it so seriously that we can't laugh at ourselves. And Steven Steigman, our founding producer, still with us on this program for all these 10 years.
Still with you.
Yeah. We don't take ourselves
too seriously. Like the scab that just won't go away.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but that's probably good, because we've got to laugh at ourselves a little bit, and there's a lot to laugh at a lot of times.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. We were talking about some of the shows that I've enjoyed the most, and I've got to tell you.
Wait, can I interrupt you right there?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, one thing that most people might, some people have already heard this, not only is it our 10th birthday today,
but
your birthday today.
It is, and turning 35 is an absolute privilege. I never thought I'd get here.
Wow.
Thrilled to be here.
No kidding,
35.
Which would make me 20.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I was, how old when we started this show?
And I got to tell you what a thrill it is to come into the station every day. It's a highlight of the day to come down here. Sort of breaks up my day from the newspaper and come in here and do something a little bit different, and it's just a kick in the pants to do it every day. We were talking before in our last segment about some of our favorite programs.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, one more of mine was Glenn McGee, the Center for Practical Bioethics here in Kansas City, who came in one day and sort of broke the news to me that, you know, of course, our generation is going to live longer than our parents' generation, then our kids are going to be living well into their hundreds, 120, 130, maybe. And then their kids, he said, will be maybe even 150. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was just astonishing to me.
Let's hear the clip.
See, in the United States, that, as everyone knows, represents incredible increases in our expected lifespan. A number of scientists who focus just on this at Yale say that living to 130 for those who are now 30 years old or younger is not an unrealistic expectation.
Whoa. 130 for years. Those who are 30 years old right now.
That's right. 100 more years to look forward to.
Our producer is going nuts in the booth behind you. He's not much older than 30. So
yeah, but I saw him eat a chocolate chip cookie, so he's probably not going to be in that group.
That's going to cost him, isn't
That's
it?
Right.
I just couldn't believe that he was saying 130 years old, maybe 150, 170.
I can't even imagine
just
that.
Just amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was just absolutely incredible to hear Glenn McGee talking about that. Someone else I really enjoyed, and just a personal favorite, William Least Heat Moon of Columbia, the author of Blue Highways and a host of other books. But the book that really stuck with me was a book called Prairie Earth, a story about several years he spent down in the Flint Hills around Cottonwood Falls. And I'm not sure the book is for everybody, but it just touched me in a way, and I just swallowed that book up over the years. He came on to talk about writing that book and how much he had invested in that story. I just loved it. Just loved him, loved the story.
Some of our best authors are local folks. The other person that comes to mind is Candace Millard. And you know, a story about William Lisa Moon. Here he is in Columbia. He's nearby. He shouldn't be too hard to book. It took us, Danny Alexander's on the mic with us. Danny, how long did it take us to book William Lee Seat Moon?
It took us the better part of a year to get him out. Because we originally wanted to interview him on the prairie.
That's right.
In the county. And we started looking into that early summer, and we didn't get him until October. After October. So pretty much half a year at least to get him.
Well, Prairie Earth is really unlike any other book I'd ever read. Very personal story. All the little things he learned and discovered about the Flint Hills, which is a part of Kansas I would love to spend more time walking around and just absorbing, like William Lee's Heat Moon did with that book. But I guess that leads us to my favorite show of all time, of the last 10 years. And I guess it's going to surprise a lot of people because I didn't expect this guest to be as good as he was. And he just absolutely floored me with his story. And the name won't mean much to folks unless you're from the Chicago area. His name is Bob Love. Who, if you have never heard of him before, he was the all-time leading scorer for the Chicago Bulls until a guy named Jordan came along. But Bob Love's story begins with the fact that he had and has now conquered an absolutely devastating stutter. He was injured in the mid-70s playing for the Bulls. And his story begins with the fact that his wife said she wanted a divorce because she didn't want to be married to no cripple. At least that's how she put it, according to Bob Love. The stutter made it very difficult for him to land a job. Long story short, he struggles to find gainful employment, winds up, if you can believe this, at Nordstrom's in Seattle, Washington. He's bussing tables. And you would think this would be a story of a great crash, but it's just the opposite of that. Bob Love was absolutely determined to be the best busboy he could be working at Nordstrom's in Seattle. His bosses finally came to him after several years and said, "Bob, we want to get you some help for your stutter." And Bob Love was just overcome with that idea because no one had ever offered to help him before. He winds up back at school in a program designed to help him overcome his stutter. He achieves that. He manages to get it done. And the Chicago Bulls wind up rehiring him in the 90s as their community relations director. Stuggy, what else do you recall from that show?
Well, you know, we asked Bob if he was the kind of player who always wanted the ball. And, well, this is how he explained how he let the coach know that he indeed did.
You know, the coach would call a timeout. All the players would come up to the sideline. See, man, you could tell the players who wanted the ball, man. They look right at the coach. And all the guys who didn't want the ball in their hand, man.
Looking somewhere else.
They look up in the ceiling. They look, give me some water, coach. Give me some water, trainer. Bring me a towel.
Well, you can hear it in his voice that he is still struggling and he has to concentrate very hard on his speech. But I was just absolutely blown away by his story and his incredible heights that he reached in his career as a basketball player. And then the incredible depths that he endured in the years after his time with the Chicago Bulls. Mm-hmm. It was a story that anyone can be inspired by. And I just thought it was just terrific.
Yeah, and it wasn't a sports story about a particular game or a particular team. It was a story that, you know, that public radio is so good at, which is telling the behind-the-scenes story of a particular sport, the economics of sports, those stories that anybody can relate to, even if you could care less about basketball. We're talking about basketball, right?
Well, Bob Love, he gets my nomination for maybe the greatest interview we've had here in our years, and there have been so many other ones that we could have picked from, but that one really has stood out for me. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske on this 10th anniversary edition of Up to Date. 10 years ago today, this show began in its current edition. I'm just thrilled to have Danny Alexander and Steven Steigman, the two folks who are behind the scenes, our two producers who put on this show and arrange it and get everything together every day. Danny, nice to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here.
Steigy, of course, always good to have you,
always
too.
Always a pleasure.
Danny, you want to talk about our culinary expeditions and funny things that happen.
They are among my favorite, wouldn't you say, Steven?
They're absolutely my favorite. I mean, come on, it's a remote broadcast talking about food. And what do we do afterwards? We
eat the food.
Right. No, what could be bad? Well,
we visited Blue Stem Restaurant in 2011 with chefs Colby and Megan Garrett, during which, as we recall, Steve, you pointed to a dish of onions and called them potatoes. But you did recognize your shortcomings, as we're about to hear.
You know, and I think that's a great plan because I have absolutely, this is a whole different world for me. This is not where I spend my time. It's so interesting to watch you guys work.
What happened there?
Well, we thought that you had learned that, yes, it's interesting to watch them work. But apparently you don't always follow your own advice, Steve, because we just 2 weeks later visited Lydia Bastianich, the famous public television chef, in her restaurant here in town, Lydia's, Kansas City. She gave you a chance to prove your prowess in the kitchen. Let's hear how that went.
Now we'll whisk some eggs. Steve, Grace, who's going to whisk the egg here?
I'm going to whisk the eggs because that's the one thing in the kitchen I can do. There we go.
Okay.
Look at that whisk. I am good at that. Look at that.
Okay, we're cracking this.
I'm not getting,
you look like a pro.
I'm not getting the yolks yet, am I?
Okay, you have to, you're going in a circle. How about whisking it up a little bit?
What do you mean, like what? Come on, show me, man.
Listen to the difference.
You spill on me, you're paying for the dry cleaning here.
It's like the motor now.
You're getting mad at it.
You can do that. Go ahead. Let's see.
Steve was just rocking them to sleep.
Yeah, whatever you're doing there. I like this.
There you go.
You should have seen those yolks. You were doing nothing to them for like 10 seconds. Like, they're just going in a circle.
And Danny, you've never let me forget it either.
No, I haven't, because I was back here monitoring things here, and I could just tell by the sound of the bowl going around. I went, he's not. And then the minute she came in, you did. And that's what sound, that's how important sound is to us when we do those culinary expeditions, is that.
Yeah.
Well, we almost missed that segment because the microphone we used was dead.
Yeah.
And like with 20 seconds remaining in a break before we went back to the show, back to the kitchen, 75 feet away, I plugged in another mic, and by the miracle of God, I mean, the thing worked.
That shows you my prowess in the kitchen. Steggy, you picked out some of your all-time favorite episodes as well.
You know, some of my favorite shows are these remote broadcasts we do. The one we did outside of our normal hour, we did from the grand opening of the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. We did a live broadcast from 6 to 7 with all the people that put it together. Moshe Safdie, Jane Chu, Michael Stern.
And I will never forget all the limousines stacked up on the south side of the Kauffman Center that I've never seen that many limos in Kansas City in my life.
And those were the ones just for us. Then there was our remote broadcast, speaking of Performing Arts Center, Jazz at Lincoln Center. We traveled to New York because Jazz at Lincoln Center was celebrating jazz from around the country. That weekend was Kansas City. And we did a broadcast from Jazz at Lincoln Center, and our guests were folks like Chuck Haddix and Bobby Watson, the guy who writes our theme music. And like 2 minutes before our live broadcast, there was no ISDN connection, no signal back to the station. We weren't going to have a show. And Bill Anderson tells a story about a guy back in a wiring closet twisting wires with like 60 seconds to go.
That was my most favorite remote, only because that's at performing space at Jazz at Lincoln Center was just absolutely beautiful.
It's stunning.
What a great memory that was. Yeah.